The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Derek Frost from North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading from Triangle Business Journal. Today's program is underwritten by Highwoods Properties. With its headquarters in Raleigh, North Carolina, Highwoods, a real estate investment trust, is committed to making our communities better places to live and work. Highwoods can be reached at 866-449-6637. And we start on the front page of the Triangle Business Journal with the cover story headline, When Women Succeed, Our Communities Succeed. Female executives share strategies for strengthening the roles of women in business. And this series of articles and quotes begins inside the Triangle Business Journal with the second headline, Be Empowered. On May 21, a sold-out crowd of women gathered for a series of thought-provoking conversations on successes, challenges, and opportunities facing women as they break through barriers and rise to leadership in the business world. And first, we have a note in an article from the editor-in-chief, Rebecca Troyer. After a sizzling event, the real work begins. May 21 marked the beginning of something remarkable. On that day at the Umstead Hotel and Spa, just under 300 women came together to hear and share stories of setbacks, successes, lessons learned, and leadership earned. You'll get a sampling of those stories on the pages that follow, but far more stories and strategies are being carried into the Triangle business community by attendees who left inspired and ready to tackle their own career journeys in new ways. New friendships have been formed, mentorships are being established, and connections are being solidified. When women learn what's possible from others who have paved the way, they are more likely to raise their hands, take the risks, and apply for the bigger jobs. That's where the real impact from an event like this begins. To be honest, I long for the day when these sorts of events aren't needed because women are leading and succeeding in the same proportions as men. But sadly, corporate America has a long way to go. According to a recent McKinsey report, women hold just 10% of CEO positions across the Fortune 500. Despite steady gains at the helms of major S&P 500 firms, women remain underrepresented in C-suite roles. In addition, too many institutional and individual investors have historically been reluctant to invest in women-led organizations. In 2024, fewer than 2% of all venture dollars went to women entrepreneurs. As women in business, we can't afford to wait for someone else to empower us. We have to empower ourselves. And our first article is written by Kate Tracy, covering keynote speaker, First Lady Anna Stein. A career with starts, stops, and curveballs. Nothing about First Lady Anna Stein's career has unfolded in a linear fashion. Speaking to a packed room at Triangle Business Journal's Empowered Women's Forum on May 21 at the Umstead Hotel and Spa in Cary, Stein detailed how unexpected her life has been and how none of her past experiences have gone to waste. When she was younger, Stein thought she would move up and steadily climb the ranks in her career. What has happened instead has been a series of stops and starts and then, most recently, a total curveball, Stein said. After graduating from law school at 25, Stein worked as a judicial clerk and then as an associate at a Raleigh law firm before moving to Washington, D.C. Then came the birth of her first child, then her second, then her third. All told, I had an entire decade out of the workforce, actively chasing children, Stein said. When Stein came up for breath after the early child-raising days, she became transfixed by the idea of going back to graduate school. She enrolled in a public health program at the University of North Carolina. At the age of 42, after she graduated, she began a second career at the North Carolina Division of Public Health. One of her first responsibilities was implementing the newly passed smoke-free bars and restaurants law. Stein then became an expert around tobacco, e-cigarette, and cannabis laws, which translated into work around opioid policy. At her encouragement, her husband helped lead the national settlements holding drug companies accountable for opioid addiction. That settlement brought nearly $1.5 billion to North Carolina to help people struggling with addiction. I see on a regular basis the role that that money is playing in our communities, and I'm very proud of his role, Stein said. Then the big curveball came when her husband was elected governor. Stein made the decision to devote herself to the public role as First Lady, leaving her job and colleagues at the Division of Public Health. I have found that every stage of my life has informed and enriched the next stage, and that no path that I took along the way was wasted time, Stein said. Stein's top three priorities as First Lady are reducing stigma against people with mental health and substance abuse disorders, improving rehabilitation and reentry of people in North Carolina's prisons, and promoting rural tourism. And our next article, written by Kaylee Thompson, covers opening speaker, Lieutenant Governor Rachel Hunt. Hunt urges women to step up and take on tough jobs. Kicking off TBJ's Empowered Women's Forum on May 21, North Carolina Lieutenant Governor Rachel Hunt, whose career spans both a successful law practice and years of public service, energized the crowd with a passion reflective of the legacy of her parents, former Governor and First Lady Jim and Carolyn Hunt. Hunt spoke about how many women tend to think they have to meet every qualification before they can apply for a job, ask for a promotion, or speak up, while others jump in without meeting every qualification. Growth happens when we are willing to take on challenges before we feel fully prepared for them, Hunt said. As Lieutenant Governor, she shared how important it is for the state to continue to be a place that provides opportunity for everyone, especially working families. She emphasized that child care, workplace flexibility, health care access, and equal opportunity are not separate from economic growth. They are essential to it. When women succeed, our community succeed, our business succeed, our economy succeeds, Hunt said. Hunt shared how her mother was the best example of leadership for her as a young girl. Carolyn Hunt also demonstrated how a woman can act and lead when in a space where she doesn't feel welcome or comfortable. The lieutenant governor likened it to how several women feel in the workplace, especially as they climb the corporate ladder. I watched her lead in ways that often happened quietly and behind the scenes. What stayed with me most was that leadership did not always have to be loud and to be powerful. She taught me that preparation matters, relationship matters, listening matters, and lifting other people up matters, Hunt said. And now we have panel takeaways from the four panels that happened during the conference. Let's see, this first one is written by Lauren Onasorge, five takeaways from C-suite panel. Three panelists who worked their way to the C-suite of their companies, along with a moderator who's been a top executive at Google, AT&T, and Fidelity Services, shared personal stories on mistakes made and lessons learned in their ascent to their corporate leadership roles. The moderator, Tina, P-I-C-C-I-O-N-E, so it could be Piccioni, former CIO for the state of North Carolina, Natasha Austin, EVP, Director of Carolina's Operations, Dogwood State Bank, a division of Town Bank, Margaret Chadwick, these are the panelists now, Margaret Chadwick, SVP and CHRO at Wolfspeed, and Nikki Heron, CFO, Pappas Capital. The five takeaways, one, lead your own way. Don't look at how it has been done, Heron said. Come in with your vision. Two, let your team execute. Maybe you don't need to be the doer, Austin said. Maybe you can be the leader. Three, lead with your ears. Focus on trying to become an exceptional listener, Chadwick said. The world is full of talkers. Where I think we can differentiate ourselves is to be a great listener. Four, don't overuse "I'm sorry." Don't apologize, said moderator Piccioni. Don't we find ourselves doing that all the time? Oh, my goodness, y'all, stop it. And number five, bring humor to the boardroom. A sense of humor goes a long way. Not taking yourself or the situation too seriously goes a long way, Chadwick said, telling the crowd to assume positive intent. The next one's written by Kay Tracy. Can you have it all? Experts on workplace wellness say yes. Panel moderator, Jeronica Goodwin, used to be a self-described workaholic. It wasn't until a company reorganization and layoff stopped her in her tracks and forced her to reevaluate her life. Even if you love work, love yourself equally, if not more. And in this one, the moderator is Jeronica Goodwin, Senior Vice President of Human Resources and Chief People Officer, WakeMed Health and Hospitals. The panelists, Sandy Ball, Chief People Officer, Aspida, Kelly Crosby, Assistant Secretary, Division of Mental Health, Development, and Disabilities and Substance Abuse, NCDHHS. Carol Wagner, Area Executive Vice President for Gallagher's Durham Office. And Anika Wall, Vice President of Customer Care Transformation at MetLife. One, create transitions. After a tough day at the office, Ball takes a shower to literally and figuratively wash off work. It's important not to let baggage from work or home carry over into each other. 2, data builds confidence. Goodwin shared that leaning into data at work, spouting off KPIs, providing metrics can build confidence at work. Women need to and show through data that they're qualified. 3, plan ahead. You cannot be everywhere all at once. If demands at work or at home come up last minute, Wall urged women not to feel guilty about saying no. 4, find your joy. Crosby unapologetically loves her job. She, along with other panelists, encouraged women to find more of what fills them up and make those things a priority. And 5, lean into the rhythms of life. I don't want the highs and lows to stop. I just want it to be sustainable, Wall said. And the next panel is 5 funding takeaways. This is written by Lauren Onosorge. The Triangle needs more female entrepreneurs and more female investors, panelists emphasized. Women have to control the money, Jones said. That's how the narrative shifts. Moderator, Krista Covey, president, First Flight Venture Center. The panelists, Jamie Jones, director for Duke Innovation and Entrepreneurship and associate professor of the practice of management, Fuqua School of Business. Jean Summey, co-founder and general partner, Primordial Ventures, and Michelle Woodward, founder of Diced, restaurant chain in the Triangle. 1, be authentic. I'm looking first and foremost for authenticity, Summey said. Venture capital is a relationship business. 2, find a real customer. Have some evidence, ideally revenue from a customer, that demonstrates somebody is willing to pay you for the product or idea, Jones said. 3, focus on business opportunity. When you're talking to an investor, the first thing you need to do is to make a very clear business case and put it right up front, Summey said. 4, walk in with confidence. Woodward said she succeeded with complete delusional confidence and that it drove her in when she started Triangle Salad Chain Diced. And 5, participate. Women don't get enough funding. This needs to change, and it starts with us, Summey said. We all need to be involved in entrepreneurship, every single piece of it. And finally, the panel on negotiations at all stages of work and life. This is written by Kaylee Thompson. Getting heard can be especially challenging for women, many of whom were taught by social and educational institutions to be the conciliators, peacemakers, and supporters rather than standing up for themselves, not only in business but in life. And negotiation goes far beyond numbers on a W-2 form. The moderator, Rebecca Troyer, editor-in-chief, Triangle Business Journal, and former practicing attorney. The panelists, Sidney Batch, attorney, Batch, Poor, and Williams, and leader of the North Carolina Senate Democratic Caucus. Susan Folkemmer, chief development and acquisitions officer, The Priest Company. And Erica Rooney, founder, Her Collective, author, and former chief people officer. 1, it's not just about salary. Rooney stressed that negotiation encompasses every aspect of a job that includes flexibility, continuing education, budget, future severance, and more. 2, identify the wish list. What's your pie in the sky and what's your bottom line? Batch asks her clients. Also identify what the other party wants and what's going to motivate the other side to a resolution. 3, be willing to walk away. Folkemmer emphasized that it's important to know that sometimes a negotiation won't work out and you have to be comfortable with and willing to walk away. 4, negotiate each stage of life. Batch advised that it's important to negotiate for flexibility depending on the stage of life. As women, we are often handcuffing ourselves instead of demanding more. And 5, honor your values. Rooney stressed that everything you stand for means nothing if you stay at a job where values are so greatly misaligned with your own. Be comfortable making the tough decision to leave. And to wrap up this section, we have some quotes from attendees at the forum. Forums like this matter because meaningful progress happens when we learn from one another and share what it takes to actually lead. Claudia Kittredge, Senior Director, Cloud Support Engineering at RapidScale. One of the most important lessons I've learned, don't wait until you're completely ready to take the next step. Rachel Hunt, Lieutenant Governor of North Carolina. to me, there's no such thing as work-life balance. I think it's about harmony and how do we blend all those roles together. Carol Wagner, EVP, Durham Office, Gallagher. One of the things I do when I start a meeting is, who is taking the notes? In other words, it's not me. Tina Piccioni, former NC State CIO, on pushing back against stereotypes. If you don't become a subject matter expert in AI, then you will be replaced. Anika Wall, VP of Customer Care Transformation, MetLife. I think it's actually hard to have that mindset to be okay with actually loving your career and loving working a lot, which I actually do, and just convincing people that that's not necessarily a bad thing. Kelly Crosby, Assistant Secretary, NCDHHS. Mentor women coming behind you. Sidney Batch, attorney, Batch, Poor, and Williams, the leader of North Carolina Senate Democratic Caucus. And finally, as a rule, it's better to confront in private than in public. Even if that conversation doesn't go super well, you've made an impression on that person. Margaret Chadwick, SVP and Chief Human Resources Officer, Wolfspeed. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to Biz, a quick glance at Triangle happenings, written by Dane Huffman. Ninja Warrior style gym expands. Rock Solid Warrior eyes expansion with new sites in Roseville, Apex. As the fitness scene keeps gaining momentum, a local gym is in serious growth mode. Rock Solid Warrior is expanding with a new 11,000 square foot facility in Roseville that's set to open in September next to the upcoming Puckmasters hockey facility. The obstacle course style gym, modeled after the hit show American Ninja Warrior, has also signed a lease for a future gym in Apex off U.S. Highway 64 near the American Tobacco Trail, with the plan to open in 2027 or 2028. The additions will join existing gyms in Fuquay Arena and South Apex. CEO Ken Auer said the Triangle can support several more locations. There are only a few people that will travel more than about 20 minutes for a sport. There's probably room for about 7 or 8 more gyms in the Triangle that would still be 15 to 20 minutes from each other, he said. Rock Solid Warrior offers classes, competitions, parties, and camps, with kids making up at least 90% of members, a notable figure considering the number of young families moving to the region. Camps are a key driver, and our said parents often report growing confidence in their children. We often get a lot of comments from parents of the kids who are coming here saying how much confidence they're gaining that's carrying on into other places in life because of what they're seeing they can accomplish in the gym, Auer said. The company is a family affair with Auer's wife and children involved. He launched the business in 2019 after his sons got hooked on American Ninja Warrior but lacked a nearby training option. Rock Solid generated about $2.5 million in revenue in 2025 across its two gyms, with annual growth of 10 to 20% outside the pandemic years. It employs 60 people and budgets around $500,000 to build out each new facility. And actually, that article was written by Kate Tracy. The rest are by Dane Huffman. Tanger Outlet lands sparkly new tenant. An Austrian jeweler has now opened at Tanger Outlets in Meppen. Swarovski officially opened May 27 in a new 2,550-square-foot space between Palmetto Moon and Hugo Boss, and across from Polo Ralph Lauren. Triad Business Journal reports, Swarovski is a luxury goods conglomerate that designs, manufactures, distributes, and sells jewelry, watches, and glass. Tanger Meppen is a 319,000-square-foot center featuring more than 70 outlet stores. Swarovski joins other recently opened stores, including New Balance and Merrill. Jet Zero to soon break ground on NC operations. A California aviation startup that has big plans for the Triad area announced May 26 it will break ground on its new factory at Piedmont Triad International Airport next month, Triad Business Journal reports. Jet Zero plans to hire more than 14,000 workers in the Triad over the next decade. The aerospace company is planning to build the world's first commercial all-wing aircraft in Greensboro and will hold a public groundbreaking ceremony on June 15, marking the official start of construction on its $4.7 billion campus at PTI. Triangle leader dies at 102. Longtime Raleigh orthodontist and Triangle leader Henry Zaytoon Sr. died on Memorial Day. He was 102. Born February 23, 1924, Zaytoun received dental training at UNC Chapel Hill and the University of Maryland School of Dentistry before entering the military, where he served as a naval dental officer at the U.S. 3rd Army Headquarters in Heidelberg, Germany. Once he returned home, Zaytoun moved to Rocky Mount, where he started his dental practice. After marrying and earning his M.S. in orthodontics from UNC, his family moved to Raleigh, according to his obituary. Zaytoun built Zaytoun Orthodontics over the next 60 years and served as a leader in the area, including being a past president of the North Carolina Association of Orthodontists. He was awarded the Order of the Longleaf Pine by then-Governor Mike Easley. Zaytoun is survived by his 9 children, 24 grandchildren, and 22 great-grandchildren, per his obituary. And finally, in Brunswick County, Coastal Estate hits market for nearly $10 million. A massive property on the coast of North Carolina is up for grabs for nearly $10 million. The Cutter Ridge Plantation spreads across roughly 350 acres in Winnebo in Brunswick County. It's listed by National Land Realty for about $9.75 million. The property at 7535 Funston Road Southeast is owned by Kyle McIntyre, who purchased it in the 1990s. The estate has two residences, the Grand Ole House with 5 bedrooms, 3.5 bathrooms, and a 4-car garage, and a cottage with 2 bedrooms and 1 bathroom. Kayleen Campbell, managing broker with National Land Realty, is listing the property. He said McIntyre is selling the property because he wants to slow down a little bit, maybe build a house somewhere else. And now we turn to the top news stories in the Triangle Business Journal. The first one written by Lauren Onasorge. Stalled VinFast site could get new life. State moves to reclaim stalled megasite amid renewed interest. A megasite once pitched to Tesla and Micron could soon be back in play, potentially putting North Carolina back on a trophy manufacturer's short list as the state works to claw back real estate tied to VinFast's stalled efforts to bring an automotive plant to Chatham County. Economic developers expect manufacturers are already circling the site. VinFast, a Vietnamese electric vehicle maker, was supposed to build a 7,500-job assembly plant at the Triangle Innovation Point megasite in Moncure, about 30 miles southwest of downtown Raleigh. But more than four years after the plan was unveiled, the company has failed to deliver. The timeline for the project has been pushed back by years, and job projections have been slashed. The state filed suit May 21 in an effort to buy back the site VinFast acquired in 2022 for $44 million. Despite the lawsuit, VinFast says it still intends to move forward with building a factory. If North Carolina is able to take back the 1,765-acre site, economic developers say the state will likely see strong interest from large manufacturers. I think people are eyeing it, but nobody's going to make a serious run at it before they know they can get it without fear of litigation, said former North Carolina Commerce Secretary Tony Copeland. He called it one of the best sites on the eastern seaboard for manufacturers in a variety of areas, from automobiles to life sciences. Dennis Donovan, a principal at site selection consultant Wadley Donovan Gutshaw Consulting, also said it's an ideal location, but he predicts it will attract a different kind of user next time it's marketed. EVs are out, he said, pointing to aerospace and defense manufacturers as better bets under the Trump administration. Copeland says EVs may not be a far-off use case, however, particularly if gas prices remain elevated and the political issues in the EV space are temporary and could change in the span of an election, he said. The site has been pitched to major manufacturers for years before clinching VinFast. Micron, Peloton, and a joint venture between Toyota and Mazda were among the entities that had considered and then passed on the site, records show. Duke plans data center on campus. The $23 million project will span several parcels and total more than 22 acres. This is written by Zach Ezone. Duke University plans to develop a data center on its central campus as demand grows for computing power tied to artificial intelligence and research. The university in April was issued a building permit for a 13,173-square-foot facility at 1911 Yerby Avenue in Durham. Construction is estimated to cost about $23 million, according to records with the City of Durham. Duke filed site plans with the Durham City County Planning Department in November. The project spans several parcels totaling more than 22 acres, with development concentrated on a smaller portion of the site. The planning department also issued Duke electrical and plumbing permits in early May. During an April Academic Council meeting, Duke leaders cited growing demand for computing capacity while also describing the project as part of the university's climate and sustainability efforts. We've worked very hard with the facilities organization and our colleagues in the climate and sustainability domain to find ways to deliver on both our computational enthusiasm and the need to support the science at Duke, but also in recognition of the climate commitment and to not run afoul of that, said Tracy Futhi, Vice President and Chief Information Officer, according to minutes from the April meeting. Futhi said the university plans to circulate cool water through the data center and capture the resulting hot water for reuse in the university's and Duke Health's heating infrastructure. The university is also exploring ways to power the center as efficiently and sustainably as possible, according to the meeting minutes. Duke is also exploring how similar computing infrastructure could be deployed across the state that could include placing nodes at hospitals, schools, and sites near hydroelectric dams, said Provost Alec Gallimore during the April meeting. We have an incredible statewide network of high-speed computer connectivity, so we don't have to be in one spot, Gallimore said. Duke's on-campus data center would be a fraction of the size of industrial-scale facilities that have sparked public backlash. Local governments across the state have adopted moratoriums on new data center development. That includes Durham, where the City Council on May 4 approved a 60-day moratorium. Duke had already secured its building permit before the moratorium took effect. The ordinance also includes exemptions for facilities that support on-site operations at hospitals, educational institutions, and other uses. And our next article is also written by Zach Ezone. WakeMed rejected UNC's $5 billion merger offer. The proposal came after Atrium announced a $2 billion deal with the health system. In the days after WakeMed announced plans to join with Atrium Health, the Raleigh system turned down a rival offer from UNC Health worth more than double what Atrium was putting on the table. UNC Health on May 5 sent a letter proposing that WakeMed join the Chapel Hill-based system as part of a deal that would include a commitment to invest $5 billion in and around Wake County over 10 years. Atrium Health, under its proposal, committed to investing $2 billion in facilities, expansions, and other initiatives. UNC's unsolicited proposal came a day after the Wake County Board of Commissioners met to consider amendments to legal agreements that would allow WakeMed to move forward with the Atrium deal. Commissioners delayed a vote for at least 90 days following concerns raised by state and local officials. WakeMed, in a May 11 letter signed by Board Chair Dr. Thad McDonald, said it plans to continue pursuing its combination with Atrium. As we continue our review of your proposal, we will also remain engaged with our community around WakeMed's path forward, McDonald said in the letter. At this time, however, that path lies with Atrium Health. In the letter, McDonald also pointed to concerns about further consolidation in Wake County. WakeMed has previously said that a combination with UNC Health would control roughly 80% of the local health care market. We have heard from numerous stakeholders, including the state treasurer, that maintaining robust competition is important for our rapidly growing region, WakeMed said in a statement on May 21. However, UNC Health argued its proposal would face fewer regulatory hurdles than the Atrium deal, according to a letter signed by Greg Wessling and Tracy Lineback, chair and vice chair of the UNC Health Board of Directors. As a state agency, UNC Health said it is exempt from certain federal pre-merger antitrust filing requirements that can trigger a lengthy federal review process. UNC Health's special status and mission as a state entity dedicated to improving health within North Carolina can help reduce regulatory burden and delay, Wessling and Linebach said in the letter, which UNC Health provided to TBJ. WakeMed announced its proposed combination with Charlotte-based Atrium on May 1, following what McDonald described as a multi-year evaluation of potential partners. In its proposal, UNC Health framed its bid as a public mission alternative that would allow WakeMed to remain the anchor health system in Wake County while expanding within a broader statewide network. The proposal also called for aligning UNC Health's operations in Wake and Johnston counties under WakeMed's leadership. The proposed $5 billion investment includes at least $2.5 billion tied directly to WakeMed priorities, backed by a jointly developed capital and strategic plan focused on hospital capacity, outpatient growth, physician practices, and technology investments. WakeMed has previously said its deal with Atrium would provide access to capital as it expands in Wake County, specifically to redevelop WakeMed's flagship campus on New Bern Avenue, a project that could cost around $1 billion. And our final top news item is written by Kate Tracy. Raleigh firm buys $36 million retail portfolio. Raleigh real estate firm CityPlat has paid $36 million for 18 retail properties across the country as it expands its presence outside North Carolina. CityPlat principals Nikita Zitoff and Vincenzo Verdino said they have closed on the purchase of a retail portfolio from DJM Capital Partners based in San Jose, California. CityPlat officials disclosed the sale price. The properties include stores for Verizon, Mattress Firm, Dollar Tree, Walgreens, and Haverty's Furniture. The purchase expands CityPlat's presence across 11 states, North Carolina, Virginia, Arizona, Florida, Texas, New York, Pennsylvania, Massachusetts, South Carolina, Georgia, and Vermont. The North Carolina properties are a Dollar Tree in Killdevil Hills, another in Kinston, a Haverty's in Charlotte, and a Verizon store in Matthews. One of us received an email about it the day it hit the market, and we immediately put an offer in, Verdino said. It was a great opportunity that we saw as buying it at wholesale as a package, and then our plan is essentially selling them out individually, he said. A life insurance company provided the primary financing for the purchase, in addition to private investors and CityPlat's own capital. CityPlat will manage the properties until it decides to sell them. And now we turn to the reporter pages in the Triangle Business Journal. First, we have Kaylee Thompson's page, Real Estate and Development. Offices to be raised for apartments. Council clears way for multifamily development along Six Forks Corridor. Three office buildings along Six Forks Road in Raleigh will be demolished and replaced with multifamily development after City Council unanimously approved a rezoning May 19. The rezoning changes the properties from office mixed use up to three stories to neighborhood mixed use up to five stories. The new zoning permits up to 404 residential units, 244,771 square feet of office space, and 97,305 square feet of retail. Jamie Schwedler of Parker Poe represented the applicant, NGP Group, at the council meeting. She said the rezoning application was submitted with the goal of replacing three aging office buildings from the 1980s, quote, with a multifamily use and potentially moderately mixed-use development that is close to employees, schools, and amenities, unquote. NGP Group originally sought seven stories but adjusted to five after hearing opposition from neighbors, Schwedler said. The office buildings are leased to the North Carolina Division of Public Health, which is relocating to the new NC Department of Health and Human Services headquarters on Blue Ridge Road. The 7.02-acre site at 5601 Six Forks Road sits slightly north of the North Hills Main District. The Six Forks corridor is seeing increased investment activity. Vic's Italian Restaurant and Pizzeria is opening a location at Six Forks and Millbrook Roads. Levant's Restaurant, Bakery, and Bar will open in the 7,000 block of Six Forks Road later this year. A Raleigh real estate investor recently purchased office buildings for $16 million in the 5,000 block of Six Forks Road. The corridor continues to attract developers seeking redevelopment opportunities. California dental firm buys Morrisville buildings. A California dental company has acquired two Morrisville office buildings for $10.57 million with plans to convert them into dental education spaces. Glidewell, a dental lab operator and device manufacturer based in Irvine, California, purchased Concourse Lakeside 1 and 2 on Slater Road near Raleigh-Durham International Airport, per Wake County deed records. The buildings are just 18% leased and went through foreclosure proceedings and a public auction in 2024. TD Bank sold the buildings after acquiring them through the foreclosure auction for $13 million. Foundry Commercial previously owned the properties, paying $24.2 million in 2017 using a $17 million loan from TD Bank. Jim Glidewell, founder and president, said the company offers continuing education for dental procedures at its West Coast site. With 75% of dentists being east of the Mississippi, it's a long flight for these two-day courses. Being close to the RDU airport and plenty of hotels in the area make it an easy connection, Glidewell said. The two-story buildings total 158,256 square feet on 13.25 acres. The combined assessed value is $27.3 million. The office vacancy rate in the Triangle for first quarter was 15.98%, according to Triangle Business Journal space data. Judge dismisses rezoning lawsuit. Wake County Superior Court Judge Clayton Summers has dismissed a lawsuit challenging the City of Raleigh's controversial rezoning for a high-rise development along Peace Street. Residents from the Glenwood Brooklyn Historic District filed the lawsuit in early December, claiming the rezoning was procedurally deficient, violated due process, was illegal spot zoning, and was arbitrary and capricious. A main concern was that a high-rise building could cast a shadow on the neighborhood. In his order, Summers dismissed all causes of action in the claim due to the failure to state claim upon which relief may be granted. The plaintiffs, Roy Atride III, Connie Upchurch, and David Knight, were represented by Kevin Hornick of Bro Law Firm, who did not return a request for comment. In February, the city and city council filed a motion to dismiss, stating the plaintiffs do not have standing to maintain this action. The City of Raleigh Attorney's Office declined to comment on the ruling. The zoning was approved in October after initially being rejected in 2023 over height concerns. Developer Raleigh Development Company refiled in April 2025 with changes. The rezoning allows up to 938 residential units, up to 500,000 square feet of office space, and up to 66,210 square feet of retail space. Early concept plans show a 24-story building on the northern portion and a 27-story building on the southern portion. And finally on this page, we have a big number, $700,000. The price for new homes in a Toll Brothers community plan for West Cary near Highway 540. The 99-unit community will feature townhomes with 4 and 5 bedrooms. And now we turn to Zach Ezone's page on healthcare and life sciences. Duke Endoscopy Center costs triple. West Cary project now delayed to 2027 with price nearing $10 million. A Duke Health Gastrointestinal Endoscopy Center in Cary, originally slated to open in 2022, is now targeting 2027, with costs nearly tripling to $9.99 million from $3.57 million. The facility, approved in 2019, faced delays from pandemic disruptions and organizational changes at Duke. The NC Department of Health and Human Services approved a cost adjustment in February after Duke filed for an extension. The four-room endoscopy center is now expected to open in June 2027 as part of Duke's broader West Cary Medical Campus expansion off Green Level West Road. Private Diagnostic Clinic, a physician practice affiliated with Duke Health, originally secured approval for the ambulatory surgery center. The practice dissolved in 2023, leading to the formation of Duke Health Integrated Practice within the health system. The project stalled during the COVID pandemic due to supply chain and construction disruptions, with additional delays in 2021 and 2022 during integration discussions. Duke is rebidding construction contracts following years of rising costs. Construction estimates jumped from $1.75 million to $4.96 million, while medical equipment costs increased from $1.43 million to $3.58 million. The 9,500-square-foot facility's scope remains largely unchanged. The need and support for the original project remain robust and consistent with the original application, Duke said in an emailed statement. As the population of Wake County continues to grow in age, the demand for these essential services has not changed. Duke opened its first Cary campus building in 2022 and began construction last year on a major expansion, including an emergency department and cancer center, also expected in 2027. UNCW moves ahead with med school. The UNC system has taken a first step toward establishing a new medical school on the coast. The Board of Governors on May 21 approved a resolution allowing UNC Wilmington to begin planning for a medical school. The university says having its own medical program would expand in-state training capacity and help address persistent physician shortages in southeastern North Carolina, one of the fastest-growing regions in the country. The resolution allows the university to begin preliminary planning, including seeking accreditation from the Liaison Committee on Medical Education. The university would return to the Board of Governors in about a year with additional details. If ultimately approved, the school would be the UNC system's first new public medical school in more than 50 years. The board's support allows us to take an important next step toward addressing one of the most pressing healthcare challenges facing our region and state, UNC Wilmington Chancellor Aswani Valetti said in a press release. The proposal calls for a 4-year medical degree program with an optional accelerated 3-year track. The university aims to enroll its first class in 2029 with an initial cohort of about 60 students. The proposal does not include a standalone teaching hospital and instead relies on partnerships with regional healthcare systems. Raleigh Radiology wins MRI approval. Raleigh Radiology has secured state approval for a more than $2 million expansion to restore lost imaging capacity at its Blue Ridge Road location. The North Carolina Department of Health and Human Services approved the practice's application to acquire a fixed MRI scanner. The approval allows Raleigh Radiology to bring back services that went offline last year when longtime vendor Acumen exited its contract. Raleigh Radiology filed its application in February in response to the 2026 State Medical Facilities Plan, which identified a need for one additional fixed MRI scanner in Wake County. The practice was the lone applicant. Beginning in November, healthcare providers in North Carolina's most populous counties will no longer need a certificate of need to acquire an MRI scanner. The change stems from a 2023 law that scaled back the state's CON requirements, but CEO Jessica Bordeaux said the practice could not wait. The vendor's exit affected more than 5,000 MRI patients and forced the practice to shift patients to other locations and manage longer wait times. Average scheduling times increased about 40% from 10.67 days to 14.67 days. We applied for the CON because we really need to give that service back to those patients, Bordeaux said in an email. We do not have enough capacity to get these patients scheduled timely. The $2.3 million project is expected to come online in October. And finally, on this page, we have another big number, 5,000, the number of patients impacted by an MRI vendor's exit from a contract with Raleigh Radiology. And now we turn to Lauren Onosorge's page, Technology and Innovation. Epic preps for final battle with Apple. Game developer heads to court after nearly 6-year legal fight. Cary video game developer Epic Games has its Fortnite title back in app stores globally as CEO Tim Sweeney prepares for what he calls the final battle with Apple in court. Fortnite returned to Apple's U.S. App Store last year after a nearly 5-year ban, but remained unavailable in some markets, which Epic has said contributed to financial strain. Earlier this year, Epic announced it would cut more than 1,000 jobs, including 200 at its Cary headquarters. Epic, backed by firms such as China's Tencent and the Walt Disney Company, has been locked in litigation with Apple for nearly 6 years. Sweeney has been outspoken about the legal fight, accusing Apple of maintaining a monopoly in violation of antitrust laws. Recently on social media, Sweeney called the current moment a critical moment in the battle against the App Store empire to win freedom for all developers and consumers. He wrote that the company is heading into the final battle of Epic versus Apple in court. For years, Apple has fragmented iOS features and fees by territory, taking regulatory negotiating positions in secret and intentionally delaying the pursuit of justice, Sweeney posted on May 19. In a 2021 interview, Sweeney compared Apple's and Google's app stores to early railroad monopolies that set prices and excluded competitors until the Interstate Commerce Act of 1887 curtailed those practices. He said Apple, as a hardware firm, could compete with hardware providers, but Apple cannot use its monopoly over the iOS hardware in order to impose a monopoly over stores, he said. Stakes high for proposed ILM route. If the S line comes to fruition, it will shave off more than an hour of travel time for train trips between Raleigh and Richmond, Virginia. But it also pulls stops off the corridor, including a community founded on the tracks, Selma. Presently, Raleigh Amtrak passengers are routed through Selma, Winston, and Wilson, and Rocky Mount on their way north. A more streamlined route running through Wake Forest would remove those stops, potentially raising the stakes for another corridor being discussed, Raleigh to Wilmington. Steve Unger, co-founder of rail advocacy group Eastern Carolina Rail, said the push for the route is in full swing. We're working to put committees together and put together a unified lobbying effort, he said, noting that it's the communities themselves who may have the most at stake. Take Selma, a town founded at the intersection of two railroad lines in 1873. That history is part of why the town is cheerleading the potential for a Raleigh to Wilmington service, says Mayor Byron McAllister. The Raleigh to Wilmington line would likely include stops in Clayton, Selma, and Goldsboro. Warsaw, Wallace, and Burgaw are possibilities for the other two stops, Unger said. A report released in 2024 examined two possible routes, with the cheapest costing about $810 million. Software firm eyes downtown Raleigh space. Progress Software has filed permits to build out an eighth-floor office suite at Smoky Hollow in Glenwood South, nearly 2 years after its $875 million acquisition of ShareFile and subsequent layoff of nearly 200 Raleigh employees. The permits show plans for walls, mechanical, plumbing, and electrical work in a 30,000-square-foot space at 421 North Harrison Street. A Progress spokesperson declined to comment on the plans. Despite the 2024 layoffs, Progress officials say the company was committed to Raleigh long term. As of last year, it had about 175 employees in Raleigh across multiple segments, including ShareFile. The company has been operating from sublease space at the Block 83 campus downtown. ShareFile was founded more than two decades ago by Jesse Lipson. Citrix acquired it in 2011 and later opened a Raleigh office. And finally, Durham investor sues startup over missed payments. Durham-based Resilient Ventures has sued Techturized, and that's spelled T-E-C-H-T-U-R-I-Z-E-D, the Atlanta company behind hair care platform Myavana, alleging it failed to repay funds under a revenue-sharing investment. Resilient, which backs startups led by black founders, invested $200,000 in the women-founded company in 2020 and 2021. After missed payments, the two sides renegotiated in December 2023, replacing the performance-based structure with a fixed repayment schedule totaling about $1.28 million. Resilient claims Texturized made two payments totaling roughly $169,000 before payments stopped. The fund is seeking damages of at least $837,500. The lawsuit also alleges Texturize failed to provide required financial reports and did not issue stock certificates tied to warrants. Texturize said it is reviewing the matter with counsel. And now we turn to the final reporter page, this one written by Ben Tobin, Greater Triangle. In Johnston County, Aldi breaks ground on second store in Hot County, grocer putting new location on two-acre tract in busy corridor. A new Aldi grocery store is under construction in Clayton, one of the fastest-growing towns outside the core of the Triangle. Site work has begun on 2 acres at Clayton Boulevard and Rose Street, where the international grocery chain previously submitted plans for a store. Aldi purchased the land for $2.15 million in 2024. The site sits across from a Sheetz gas station and convenience store at one of Johnston County's busiest intersections, where Clayton connects to Flowers Plantation, a 3,000-acre community east of Clayton in unincorporated Johnston County. Aldi did not respond to requests seeking comment about when it plans to open the new store. It will be the second Aldi store in Johnston County. The first store opened in 2021 at 5142 NC42, south of Garner. Founded in 1961, Aldi operates more than 12,000 stores in more than 10 countries from its global headquarters in Germany. The chain, focused on affordability, has a growing presence in the Triangle and surrounding counties. The company typically operates smaller format stores with a limited selection of private label products designed to keep costs low. Grocery stores have been rapidly opening in Johnston County in recent years, a direct result of the county's population growth. Johnston County is the third fastest growing county in North Carolina and the fastest growing in the Triangle region, with a growth rate of 2.8% between 2024 and 2025, and a population slightly more than 256,000 per recent census estimates. Statewide, it trails only Brunswick County and Pender County on the coast. At Flowers Plantation, Florida-based grocer Publix opened its first Johnston County store in 2020. The grocer opened a second Johnston County store at 16100 NC50 near Garner in August 2025. LA firm buys Garner storage facility for $6.2 million. A global alternative investment manager has poured millions into the booming self-storage sector in one of North Carolina's fastest-growing counties. Ares Management Corporation, based in Los Angeles, purchased the Storage King USA self-storage facility at 11035 Cleveland Road in Johnston County for $6.2 million in May, according to Johnston County deed records. The facility sits on roughly 8 acres east of Interstate 40 and has a Garner address. Ares Management representatives declined to comment on the transaction. The seller is an LLC that lists the address of Charlotte-based development firm Crossland Southeast on business filings. The Johnston County deal comes as the self-storage market is red hot. According to a 2026 Outlook report on the sector published by Marcus and Millichap, developers added roughly 355 million square feet of self-storage space nationwide in the past 5 years. The sector continues benefiting from demographic shifts, including downsizing baby boomers and younger renters living in smaller homes and apartments. The Southeast has seen the highest transaction velocity of any area in the country, according to the report. And finally, Shuttered Brewery Building nets $2 million. The building that housed a recently shuttered brewery in Southern Pines has sold for $2 million. Broadhead Holdings, a Southern Pines-based LLC, purchased the 11,065-square-foot building that housed Hatchet Brewing Company at 490 Southwest Broad Street, according to Moore County deed records. Other tenants in the strip mall built in 1987 include a shipping store and a barber shop. Broadhead Holdings lists Joseph and Elizabeth Druther as managing members in business filings with the North Carolina Secretary of State. The married couple founded Druther Homes in 2015, building homes in the area. They did not respond to requests for comment. The seller is 490 Broad LLC, a group tied to local developer David Crisafulli. The LLC purchased the property in January 2014 for $745,000. Hatchet Brewing had operated out of 490 Southwest Broad Street since 2019 before closing at the end of last year. The company cited declining distribution opportunities, production setbacks, and a drop in retail sales during the government shutdown, along with rising inflation and increasing costs of raw materials, equipment, utilities, and labor. Several breweries around the region have closed tap rooms or shut down completely amid financial uncertainty, changing tastes, and stiff competition. Oh, and actually, I'm sorry, there is one more reporter page, Kate Tracy's page on retail and restaurants. New owner reimagines Raleigh Denim. Kim Baker plans to add a women's line and remodel the factory store. Kim Baker bustles around the Raleigh Denim workshop in the city's warehouse district, pointing out two vintage Reese buttonhole machines used to secure buttons on the company's jeans. After taking ownership of Raleigh Denim earlier this year, Baker has big plans for the $1 million enterprise. She's changing the layout of the factory and retail store, downsizing from 6,000 to 3,000 square feet at 319 West Martin Street. There are a lot of things that are here just in storage, honestly, Baker said, as she strolls through the store known as the Curatory. She laments how none of Raleigh Denham's jeans fit her. That's motivation to start a women's line to help grow the business. We don't offer any women's shirts, jackets, dresses, anything, so I think I would love to expand that line. That's my number one goal here, she said. A former physician's assistant from Maryland may seem like an unusual fit to run Raleigh Durham, a brand featured in Vogue, GQ, and the New York Times, but Baker sees natural connections to the business. Baker grew up around clothing and textiles thanks to her mother, who taught pattern making and design at the Art Institute of Philadelphia. For 25 years, Baker worked in medicine as a physician's assistant in critical care and hospitalist medicine. In the back of my mind, I had always wanted to own a business, always, she said. Baker found Raleigh Durham on a business brokerage website and met with owner Victor Litvinenko, who started the business with his wife Sarah Yarborough in 2008. She closed on the company in January after securing a $1.5 million loan. The majority of Raleigh Denham's revenues comes from online sales, while the remainder comes from in-store shoppers. Customers spend $200 to $445 on a pair of denim jeans. Baker plans to finish a store remodel by year's end, with new garage doors opening to the alley and glass windows allowing customers to peek into the factory. She wants to open the space for music events and community gatherings. I'm surprised at how many people here in Raleigh don't even know that we exist, she said. Two restaurants set to open near NC State's campus. Students at NC State University will soon have two new dining options near campus. Beignets and Brew, a franchise selling French-style donuts, is headed to Raleigh for its Triangle debut. The chain is coming to 3001 Hillsborough Street, Suite 120, according to its website. The suite is the former home of Moulin Ice Cream and Milk Tea. An opening date has not been announced. In addition to Raleigh, Beignets and Brew is opening a Charlotte location. And we'll stop there, as that other restaurant is the Mexican-inspired chain Qdoba, at 2510 Hillsborough Street, that should be completed by the end of the year. And today's program is underwritten by Highwoods Properties. With its headquarters in Raleigh, North Carolina, Highwoods, a real estate investment trust, is committed to making our communities better places to live and work. Highwoods can be reached at 866-449-6637. And we've run out of time for today's episode of Triangle Business Journal. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. Again, I'm Derek Frost, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. The broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138.